Welcome to Fiction Authors Talk Books, or Fat Books Podcast. This episode, I'm talking with my darling editor about the ending of Artemis University. This is a safe space for people of the industry to talk about the industry, the craft, and we'll definitely go off script. Thanks for joining us, and on to the podcast.
Hello, hello.
Good morning. I'm going back through the book because I, you know, after MU, I got to remember the little bits. Yeah.
I'm glad it's not only me, because I woke up this morning like, wait, what? What happened in this book? Where? Who's this fool who wrote it? Like, what?
Yeah. So now that I'm skimming it, I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're like, oh, no, she's going to yell at me.
Well, I just figured I should have some knowledge of what happened, or I was going to look dumb. Like, did you read this book? Did you contract this out?
Yeah, no, to be fair, it's been months for us since we've even looked at it now by this point. But no, you're still going to get yelled at. And I think it's funny enough to share that this series, you came in, what, on the third or fourth book of 26. This series has been 4 years for us together alone. This is your side hustle. So, you know, it's not your main income, but this series alone has paid for a couple of your Disney vacations. There's so many books.
Oh, for sure.
And you get to the end of it and you don't say a damn thing. Not a, it's over, we're done. That was, you know, not to boost my ego, but I think it cleaned up nicely. Like nothing. It was crickets. I was going to, first I cried because I thought you didn't like it. And then I was going to reach through the phone and just beat you. Like, how could you not say anything to your crazy, crazy author? Like, what, you failed editor school that day.
I did. I finished it at work. Don't tell my boss. And then I went on to something else and I don't even know what happened.
You had a lot going on. I will 100% give you that. And normally I'm a very understanding, crazy author. And I'm not the type who is like, tell me you love me. Tell me you love me. Like, give me the feedback, you know, boost me up. Like, normally I'm just like, whatever, we're done with another book, moving on. And apparently that's an ADHD thing that I didn't understand until recently. I don't celebrate the wins enough. It's always more just like almost like a letdown to accomplish something because you build it up so much in your head. But anyway, so like, I'm not the typical author or even person where I want my ego built. I just want to know that I didn't fuck up. That's kind of all the feedback I look for.
Oh, not like, at all. Yeah.
So, but the end of a 26 book series that almost put me in the mental hospital to finish, and crickets. So the passive aggressive comment I left on, I'm like, oh, you're finally saying something. How lovely. in the book, I was telling my bestie here and she's like, wow, you really pulled that out. You were super harsh. I'm like, that's about as harsh as I really get. Like the passive aggressive.
And I felt terrible. I felt terrible that I didn't.
Well, I didn't do it to make you feel terrible. I mean, I know that's like the dominoes falling, but it was more like,
sure.
Do you not love me at all? Because that was just mean.
Right. And do I congratulate you when I finish reading it? Do I congratulate you when it comes out? You know, there.
You did on the day it came out. Yeah. You sent love and kisses and huggins for the day it came out and released. And I was kind of like, oh, right. Because it was so out of my mind. And I was on a, like, I was even done with MU3 by then, I think. No, I was butt deep in MU3, so I was like, wait, what? Who? Huh?
Right.
But yeah, no, you congratulated me on the release. We had talked so many different times about the ending, and like, I mean, all the spoilers, because this is coming out after the book is, so we can talk.
Right.
That is, this episode is talking about the end of Artemis and the end of the podcast. So you're only talking about part of it. I'm talking about the end of the podcast.
Fair enough.
So I know one of the things is that you wanted, and I had never really seen the show, I think, besides a few like reruns at my grandma's, because it's a little bit older than I am. Not to say that you're older than me. I think you're actually a year or two younger than me, but whatever. We're not talking ages. You wanted that more like touched by an angel moment between her, Tamsin, and her mom. And
right.
I didn't understand.
Sort of part of
I had, like,
yes.
Yeah, I had to like look up the reference. And for people who don't know, tell us a bit like what exactly kind of is that? It's more like an out of body, like the soul comes back. It's more like Enchantress, where like she sees the spirit and like they have a chat, right?
Right. And I haven't seen it since I was a kid. Like, you know, we had one TV, and whatever my mom and dad were watching was what we watched. That, you know, it's just that culminating experience where they connect with the departed soul or the departing soul or whatever, and they have that closure. And so I was like, can't she whisper something, or can't she say my girl or, you know, something at the end. And you're like, no, she's dead.
Well, so I thought you meant more like Soria having a moment with the ghost. I was like, no, that really goes against the entire mythology of Artemis. So I did always plan on her kind of having a I'm sorry to hear, because that was the whole point of her having telepathy. But I also didn't want it to have it as much as Neldor's mom, because, like, Tamsin's mom made this choice. And she, I don't want her to have, like, it's understandable, like, you forgive her to a point, but I don't want her to have, like, too much forgiveness, because in the end, she still sacrificed her daughter. She sacrificed her time with her daughter. There were maybe other ways to handle things. I'm not saying to judge her, but I don't want her to have... They can make up in paradise. Like, that's kind of how I'm leaving it.
Redeemed.
Yes, exactly. She gets some understanding. Tamsin's come a long way to understand and stop hating her mother so much, which I think is more than I could handle. I think Tamsin's pretty amazing for that, because I still have very aggressive feelings for my mother for way less things.
I've been destroying a world for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Or in your name.
Yeah. Then again, my mother never apologizes. So that's a whole different other therapy session. But yes, but I also knew that Tamsin's dad was going to tear through paradise to get her at least a Morse code signal of we're okay down here or up here, you know, wherever.
Yeah. Cut through her grief and got her to snap out of it a little bit.
Yeah. I know some people are going to have an issue with Luca being the last love scene. And I know people are, I had even one of the betas was like, oh, because he's the least liked, you did that. It's like, no, I mean, it's not why it was Luca. Like, of the five, they've always kind of had their like roles. And Darby just kind of always moves at Tamsin's pace normally, except when he's being a dipshit. You know, he moves with her pace, you know, he goes with the flow. Julian was always kind of trying to get her to push forward with her magic, to learn more, to explore and, you know, come out of her shell. Hudson was trying to get her to, you know, there were all different things, but Luca was always kind of the one who could crawl into Tamsin's darkness and get her to come out. Like the kite surfing, the cream puffs, the enjoying having money more. Well, that was a bit of Hudson with the shopping and, you know, just kind of being... Hudson was really good about trying to get her to embrace her position.
Uh-huh.
But Luca was always the one that could kind of reach Tamsin in the darkness and just be like, you know what? Forget about all that. Don't worry about all that. Let's go kite surfing. Let's go get food. Let's go get, you know, he could sniff her out in the sadness. And so that's right. Where I thought it was really important for him to be the last one, because it's kind of really a fine line. And I'm actually really proud for once of how I handled something and not like looking back like cringy, but it's kind of hard to write a love scene while somebody's grieving the death of their parents.
sure, but I think it was more of a comfort and like a yes, like keep it moving kind of thing.
Yeah, not even keep it moving, but like we're still here. That was the vibe I was going for. They moved on, but you have to stay. You have to stay because you promised to love us. And I'm going to help you get out of the darkness.
Uh-huh.
And especially considering he was the one who so emotionally abused her with sex, with emotions, with, you know, everything. I think it was to show that they were going to be okay because they had the least part in her vision.
I didn't have a problem with it. I didn't see anything that was like, ugh. I felt like it was comforting to her and... you know, like a, not makeup, but like sure, a completion sure. of
closure.
Yeah. Of their relationship.
Like landmark. They moved into a new phase kind of.
Yeah. I wasn't upset about it.
No, I don't think it's upsetting. I just think people will not question, but not even like be mad about the choice, but they'll wonder why he was the one or why he, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Cause they each got one solo last sex scene, though I know probably in a reverse harem they wanted one last all of them. But I know a lot of, I've gotten enough feedback that I failed as a reverse harem because they're not always all in the bed all the time. But then I don't like reverse harems like that because then it becomes like a hive mind. Like it's just them, never us or one of them. Like
right. Individuality is missing.
Yes. And I think I did that better than I did the harem part. And to me, that was more important. So do I think I should have had them more all together as a collective? Absolutely. And I take that constructive criticism and feedback. And, you know, this was my first type of this. I've done more where guys come and go, like, you know, Soria or even Seraphine, or, you know, so it was always going to be like an ongoing growth, and some leave, some stay, you know, some are hooking up in bed together, but it's not like mates and set. And this was like the first, well, especially as Aaron doing it, like in such a long series that completed. So,
well, I'm not mad about it. So I haven't read a lot in this genre, but
yeah,
I think that she needs the individual partners, and she needs to then have their own pull with her and their own direction that they're taking her, because all together they become, you know, parts of a whole or greater than the sum of their parts. Is that the right saying? Yeah.
I think so. And I think it fits here, because a lot of them in the genre, and I'm not picking on anyone, I'm not even picking on other authors or anything, like everybody likes different things. But sometimes, to me personally, with my experiences, it feels more like the guys gang up on the one. And that was something Tamsin was always worried about. So especially for Tamsin, their individuality was really important.
Mm.
But writing the ending, especially the her dad dying, just killed me. It was, oh God.
It was heartbreaking. Yes. Ugh.
But it had to happen. Like, I know some people were still holding out for hope that Tamsin's mom, there was a way to save Tamsin's mom. But the whole series was just set up. The whole series and this ending is a gentle landing, and that's I don't like where the very last book is a 1-2 punch switch. I don't like it.
We were not unclear that it was gonna happen.
I couldn't have made it more clear how this was gonna end if I took out billboards. Like, I was very not subtle for once in my breadcrumbs. There were a good amount of people who were still holding out hope that, you know, the moms would be saved, this would all be fixed, you know. But I don't use death as just an emotional tool or just to get the plot along. But this was necessary. We lose people in life. That's learning to cope with that and, you know, move forward is a necessary skill, and it's just real life, you know. So... and it just, right. it just didn't work. How could Tamsin become queen if her mom was still alive? And, like, you know, like,
that's what I was going to say. She would always be falling back on, well, my dad's here, so I don't have to. So,
yes.
So it gave her, yeah, it gave her that push, even if she didn't want it. She knew it was coming, and losing her mom was always going to happen. And so I don't think that was as heartbreaking. She was like, oh, I got to go do this thing. It's like, oh, I have to go and, you know, like, do whatever that chore is that I don't want to do. And not that her mother is a chore, but
no, but she was even gutted over it. Like, I feel like I'm a bad daughter for not grieving my mother more, but she didn't know her mom. Like, it's, again, they'll be all happy in paradise and make up, and she'll get to know her mom then one day far, far, far into the future. And, like, it's fine. You know,
it's like when a celebrity dies, you may feel a connection to that celebrity because you've known about them and they've been a part of your
them.
Yeah. Yeah. And so they're larger than life, and then they die and you're like, oh, I don't like that person's out of my life, but also they didn't impact my life.
Yeah. Like Alan Rickman and David Bowie, when they both, because it was like the same month, like my birthday, one of them died. David Bowie and I share a birthday, and then they both died like right next to each other. And I was just, yeah, I obviously don't know either of them, and like, I don't have any connection with David Bowie besides we share a birthday, but it was just, they were both very good people, and like, you know, cast and crew that they've worked with, like, they had a nice impact on the world. And so, like you're saying, like, I was very upset, but you know, to a normal level, because I don't know them. So it's very different than, yeah.
Yeah, and I think she had appropriate responses to both of those deaths. She did have and I don't want to say it was an extreme response to her dad dying, but it was very dark and very, you know, very trying for her. And so when she finally got that message, yeah, and came out of it, that was great to see. And that was, you know, it felt like a deep breath, like a,
yes,
okay, she can do this.
So Tamsin's, not to get too personal here, but Tamsin's response to her, so when my grandfather died, who was honestly a bit more like my dad than my actual dad, who I don't hide that I have issues with and I'm no contact with, I had trouble leaving. I couldn't, everybody else left after he was, and I couldn't leave. I had to make sure that they really filled everything in at the cemetery. And then I just sat there for hours and I kept going back for the next week. I kept going back and I had a hard time leaving and worrying about him being lonely. So that was actually me. Some piece of everything is always me. That was my piece where I know he was gone, but I always think cemeteries are for the living and for the dead. It's kind of, I don't want to be buried like that. I actually really like, and I know people know that I like K-dramas and whatever, but I actually like that culture where the urns are all in a bright place that is, I don't know if you've ever seen how it's done more in Asian culture, but they're like, it's more like a really cool almost library where the urns are on display and there's pictures and there's like pressed flowers and it's very vibrant. And but there's buddies there, not 6 feet apart in the ground. It's I always thought that was better for the deceased. I mean, obviously they're not there. That's not what I believe. But I'm trying to think of what's the one. Oh, like Mulan, where all the ghosties are hanging out by
the shrine. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I always kind of had that, like, that feeling where, but in the cemeteries, it's always so dark and zombies and, you know, the cats are going to get, you know, rabies because they go in the cemeteries. Like, it's always creepy in our Catholic, Christian, whatever culture versus in more Asian cultures, it's all a big, like, almost party because they're all hanging out together. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's, I just like that better. Like that's kind of, so that's why I had a hard time leaving. I didn't like leaving him. No, I mean, even where my family is buried or that part of my family is buried, like 15 plots down is my great grandparents. And then there are some other relatives, but they're scattered all over. And it's just, it is a nice area in the cemetery. And it's a nice area in Chicago, but it's just, I don't know. So for that part of Tamsin, it was very easy to go back there, even though it's been years and years and years and years and years. But yeah, it does. I mean, death is dark. Like you're the one left behind. And, but the vision so that vision, I've known that with the vision ending of how that was going to be before I knew even officially there was a Neldor. That was the whole point of giving Tamsin telepathy. Is I knew it would be a part of the ending. So I think it was like book 3, I started outlining the official ending when I decided on her dad and how it would come about with Fairy in reopening. I knew that that vision of her being okay would be how to give the closure of why it was okay to let Tamsin's parents go and her become queen. You know, it's been tweaked and refined since, but that was always, that vision was always the plan. And I was so nervous of finally executing that after years and years of buildup in my mind. I'm not to be disgusting, but I lost count how many times I just puked. I was so.
But we needed it, and I think the readers needed it. Just that little something that said she was a person. She was not queen only.
Yeah.
And that's,
she,
I think that's,
she lives the life that he wanted, not the reign he's worried about. He wants her to be happy and loved, and the vision of them making it and the family and him, her making it with the guys. Cause you know, I know it's not fair. Julian's the only one that got the wedding, you know?
Yeah.
They're the only ones made it, but I like that better. I know that's why people think that there's going to be another series. There's not going to be a spinoff series. Please, everyone, don't get your hopes up. I like that better. Like, I cleaned up a lot of it. I put it all together pretty neatly. But life is not that clean. I know that in general, in the reverse harem college blah, 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 genre, it's normally all said and done. They're all mated. They're all whatever. But life is messy. And I don't want to know all the answers always.
Right. And I think, you know, the guys that she's with have always had this level of uncertainty.
Yeah.
With her, and is she going to pick somebody over me, or is somebody going to get more than me? And not in a selfish way, but in a fulfillment sort of way.
Yes.
And so knowing that it does all work out, even if there are things that happen along the way that might shift the vision a little bit, but that was a comfort to them and a comfort to her. And then she was able to just give it to them, and she didn't have to fight her way through, and she didn't have to say, like, just trust me. I can say for certain it's going to be okay.
Yeah. And I like that they have reached a maturity level, all of them, where she could tell them, and yes, Julian got overly excited, and yes, you could tell that they were dying for questions, but they were able to move on. And God, it is months since I've looked at it, because I'm like, wait, who was the one that was like, okay, great, let's move on? I think it was Hudson. I love how I'm forgetting my own book, but it's so damn amazing. Yeah, I think it was Hudson that was like, okay, yeah, fine, great, we make it. I already knew that, you know? Like... learning how not to put more pressure on her.
Oh, should we mention me seeing Hudson on the plane?
Oh my God. Yeah. What kind of friend are you that you didn't bring him home for me? He was la. Yeah.
I saw him in the airport, and then we got on the plane, and I was like, oh, he's behind me. He's 10 feet tall and huge. And yeah.
Yummy. He was delicious.
Yeah. And he was really quiet, which, you know, I like in a man. He just didn't talk. So.
Yeah, a guy who I can just sit there and read with while he, you know, does his own thing. There's a guy I dated for a while, and he used to be all into the sports balls, which I'm fine with it on the background, but I'm not really totally completely all into it. But I used to just bring a book, and he'd watch football, and I'd read. And he thought it was, I didn't realize until later, but he thought it was the weirdest freaking thing. And when we were breaking up, he like completely threw it in my face. And that hurt me more than breaking up, because I thought it was... one of our best things, that we could just sit there and do our own thing and be there together. And hey, do you want something to drink? I'm gonna go to the bath. You know, it was just our time together, doing our own thing separately but together. And it was one of the things I liked best. And he was apparently thought it was the weirdest thing, and one of the reasons why he wanted to break up with me. I was like,
ew.
Yeah. He thought it was super weird that I read and just sat there with him while he. It was like. It took a while for me to, like, now from hindsight be like, no, honey, you were the problem on that one. That one, I can admit when I'm the problem. I absolutely can. Sometimes, mostly. But that one was him, because I've seen a lot of people do that. Or like, I enjoy sometimes the games I don't like, the video games I don't like playing, but I've dated other guys where I actually enjoy just watching it. I watch video game streams, but I don't always have to enjoy playing to enjoy being with you. Like, you know.
Right. I do the same thing with my husband. He watches, I don't know, it's football season right now. So he watches whatever. Baseball. I usually am reading one of your books, and he didn't care.
Yeah.
Exactly. He knows I don't like sports.
Yeah. You're just there to spend time with each other. You don't have to know the game. You don't have to comment on it. You're there to be there with him. And it's the comfort of, you know, you don't have to fill the room with conversation. And that's hard for me. That's the true definition of when I'm comfortable with somebody, is I don't feel the need to talk. I'm an introvert who nervously rambles. So if I'm not nervous, I don't feel the need to ramble. back to Artemis. There are people who are going to probably maybe notice that I did not wrap up every plot line. I didn't feel the need to on some of them. Okay. Like Ellen Guess. Do you even remember who she is?
Nope.
Yep. That's exactly my point. Like, I never went back to Councilman Guess's situation and his daughter who was sold off. When it happened, I think in book 11 or 12, or whenever she took down the warlock and witches council men, she said she'd handle it. And it's Tamsin. She handled it. I left it as a crumb if I ever wanted to go back and... revisit the situation, make some more drama out of it, you know, poke that. But I never did, because I didn't feel the need to, because all that stuff was dead, and I thought it was important to more move on to the new council with White heading it and da 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 da. So there is some of that stuff that I just left. It's not that I forgot it. I know some people will be like, oh my God, she missed this. You know, she forgot about this. I didn't. I still have all of those open plot lines, and there's really not too many, but they were basically resolved with saying Tams would handle it, and we trust our girl. She handled it. Could I have gone more into detail and revisit it? Yeah, I just didn't feel, I didn't feel the need to. Like, it felt like beating the dead horse or going back. And honestly, I just kept, in some ways, I kept giving Mason a bigger role. And I don't know, something about him, he was never supposed to be such a big character and such a big villain. But something about him ended up being part of a huge part of Tamsin's, a visualization of Tamsin's growth, of being so scared and running all the time and being, you know, because in the end, he stopped even affecting her. And so, like, that took over a lot of the wars and that Tamsin would fight and win, and like a lot of those plot points. And I it wasn't planned, but I'm really glad I kind of kept going back to Mason to show how her vision of him or her perception of him changed. Because I think a lot of us with traumatic events, obviously not quite like what happened with Tamsin and Mason, but even just stuff in our own childhood, I've looked back at stuff now as an adult, or even like I was saying about the guy who I broke up with, looking back and seeing like, oh no, that wasn't me. I think that's important. We don't do that enough. And I know, like, too many life coaches and everything are always like, you know what, stop looking in the past, look forward, look to what. But sometimes you have to look back so you stop carrying that weight with you. I no longer carry that weight of that ex-boyfriend and wondering why, what I did wrong and what I missed. Sometimes it just breaks and
it's
doesn't.
It's the concept of the forgiveness is not for the other person.
Yes.
And so you have to forgive yourself, or you have to move on for your own well-being. And yeah, I mean, I can think of instances where, you know, friendship has ended, or, you know, relationship has ended, or something happened at your job that you forever are like, oh my gosh, this wakes me up at night because I'm so embarrassed that this happened. Or,
oh yeah,
you know, you're so disappointed in yourself. And then later on, you're like, that's like such a non-issue, or yeah, no one remembers that but me.
Yes. I just had one of those for my time in corporate America where I was the jerk. Part of it was the situation, but I did not handle it in my best Aaron ability. And I finally have just come to the point of like, you were 20, nothing, just out of college. Jesus Christ, move on and forgive yourself. You would not do that now. You were a kid and you were a twit and you should not have been put in that situation. And so what? Nobody cares all these years later besides you. Let it go. We are Elsa. Jesus Christ. But yeah, sometimes some of my stuff from corporate America still wakes me up at night. And it's like, I haven't even been in corporate America for almost 15 years. Like, let it go.
Right. Right. But yeah, her seeing Mason, I think that her guys kind of get upset on her behalf because they know that she's going to get upset. And then she didn't get upset. She was like, he has become what he has become because he's stewed in his own delusions and his own hatred.
Yeah.
We're not buying into that. We're not buying what he's selling today.
But I was honestly, part of it was also, I was really disappointed in them for not going with her that day. I realized later a few people said something and I did defend it. But also when I sat back a bit, I was disappointed in the guys for not going to be there for her when she went with Juan that day.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of wanted to also show that they did all grow and they got a gimme, because sometimes you do get the gimme and you get the redo of the moment. And
yeah,
I thought it was important to show. I do feel bad for the situation. I know I'm the one who wrote it. I'm a jerk, whatever. But I do feel bad that like Mason Bear is just doomed to be. But that's also real life. We're doomed to the things we can't handle. There are people with mental illnesses that they, you know, we can't wave a magic wand or medication to fix things. Hell, I'm one of them. I can't take medication for my depression. It makes me suicidal. So like, you know, there are things out there that we just can't fix. And as much as I want to as the author, or, you know, my answer is a lot of times just kill people off. Not the bad guys. Uh-huh. I meant the bad guys. I don't just kill off good guys. You know, we can't fix everything. We can't. Everybody cannot be saved.
I'm kind of surprised that you didn't, you know, give him like a mercy ending. We're just going to take him out because euthanasia sort of situation.
Yeah.
he's never going to get better.
We'll probably become to the that will probably be the ending. I mean, in however long until he deteriorates, but until he does, there's, you know, he could get better if he wants to. Like, you got to fight for it. So she's left it to him, and until then, he's unfortunately a great training tool for the Fairy Guardians. So.
Okay, do you want to know what's on the rest of my list? The list, yes. I made? Okay, ooh, so I have... list.
Okay, you're better prepared than I am. Thank you.
Because I couldn't remember. So, Izzy adopting Freya, or sort of adopting Freya.
Yeah, that's the only really curveball I kind of threw in. I left breadcrumbs and hints, but it wasn't very obvious. But I thought that was a good conclusion.
Right, and not having... I mean, it was very responsible of you to not have Claudia as...
Oh yeah, no,
as
they're only dating
involved. Yeah,
yeah. And as a lawyer, she wouldn't have. Especially because, you know, Claudia has always been a rock of reason. Like, she's always been, even when it involved, you know, her brother's death and everything. Like, she's always been on the right side of what we should do, no matter if it felt, you know, like. So she wouldn't have just pushed for custody of Freya when they're only dating.
Right, right. And I thought that was nice for Darby, because Darby never asked for, you know, to have a sister.
The whole situation was traumatic. And there were some people that were like, oh, wow, we just wrote in a bastard sister for plot bunnies. And it was like, well, no, Darby has a thing with his family, and there was a whole thing. But it was also going to be a situation of a bit of Fairy's acceptance of Tamsin not being what they wanted. Like, she was never going to adopt Freya, but there was always that worry on the side of, like, how off the wall Tamsin could be as queen and what's bringing into their lives, you know?
But what I thought was so cute was the daycare. That it was like, well, we can't find a daycare for her to go to, so we're going to make one. And we're going to find it. We're going to find her place, and I love that. That was so cute.
I'm glad. Yeah, I wanted something better for Freya, because it was like, she would pop in here and there, and it would be like, you know, things with Darby, and then Tamsin and Darby had trouble. So it is hard to put in all the lives of five guys along with Tamsin's very full life. So it was kind of like I blinked and I was like, oh, yeah, she's not a baby anymore. Like, this is years later. She's like, you know, stuff and like things she needs as a child, not
she's
bottle.
Gonna grow too. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm glad Freya got, you know, she can have her own life and not be in the shadow of the Moore family and, you know, hidden bastard kind of vibe. And yeah, I'm glad that was handled too. Not to be like, I'm fabulous, I did this well, but I was nervous how to handle that. That wasn't a decided thing until a couple books ago how I was going to do it, because I wasn't even I knew Claudia and Izzy were going to get together from the moment they met, and I think the first or second book. That was always the plan of Izzy and Claudia. Cuz
Izzy deserves the world. She does.
I know. Izzy is so.
Okay, Izzy's something our girl. Something I thought was really funny was the Guardians OnlyFans sort of thing with the, like, calendar, the firefighter. Like, of course, I thought that was hilarious. And it was such a quirky little thing. I mean, who wouldn't buy that calendar?
Yeah, right.
Oh, oil on that.
Yeah, they should, honestly. And I just like that, you know, part of it was just to change. The normal fairy just sees all the Guardians dark and light as warmongers, because they were always dragged into these wars and the queens were always fighting. And, you know, it in a way, I said this very early on, it became like the Middle East. Nobody really knows who started what or how it all happened, but now it's just always this.
Yes.
And part of showing that the Guardians wanted to do so much for fairy was to change that perception. And now they would be, it was even like that, the head of the light family that was part of the trust saying, I am more than happy to contribute a lot more now that the Guardians will be peacekeepers as opposed to what they were. So yeah, but right. the OnlyFans thing was the joke of, like, they don't understand the world enough to be like, wait, what?
Well, but there were, you know, when you think of them, when I think of them, because we have seen the inner workings of them. They are fun and they do like to have a good time. And I mean, with the exception of a few who are just crotchety, but they're a good time and they're people and they like to do the silly stuff she does and go do the eating challenges or like, you know, guard while she's doing them. And so it was just funny that she's like, well, why don't we do this? And they're like, sorry, what? You want to do what with me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we get more money if we get naked? Well, yeah, but you know. Or like, I always just love the fact that she's always bringing food to the meetings and it just disappears. And she's like, who ate my potatoes? You know, like, I am going to miss that dynamic. I did really like the way Tamsin was with the commanders and the captains and everything. And the only thing I wish I could have figured out better, but I don't think it was plausible with the way it all worked out, was to have Tamsin's godfather with somebody. I really kind of wish he got his happily ever after in it, but it just didn't work because in a way Tamsin's mom dies officially in the end and he was in love with her. Like we don't want somebody to just be a rebound. We want more respect than that. So I like the idea that he's at least going to date hopefully sometime soon, or he asks Tamsin to try and help him find his mate maybe. But yeah, I kind of wish there was a more of a finality of him being happily ever after. But you know what? Speaking as a single woman who is comfortable in her life, everybody does not need a partner to find fulfillment and joy. So maybe I retract that. We're just going to leave him to figure out his own life, and you don't have to have a partner to be happy. You can be happy with yourself.
Right. And his work is fulfilling, and he, you know, he carries that torch, but he exercises or he demonstrates his dedication to the crown through his work with Tamsin and
he's only just over 100 or whatever year old pup. He's got to find himself.
Right. He's got time. He's got time to date. He'll get there.
Okay. What else is on the list?
I got two more things. So, and they go together. I have four more things, but they go together.
You really had a list. Okay. Oh, the only one I really wanted to hit on was the plot lines, not finishing some of them, because I just didn't feel like that was worth taking the time when there was so much else we could handle or look forward to.
Okay. So the first one is like the vote of confidence or like the laws and all of that. And then her going to the fair. So I think those things go together where she received such positive outpouring from the residents of Faerie, and then she decided, well, I want to go and experience Faerie that I didn't get to experience when I was growing up. And so she gets to go out to the fairs and or whatever, I can't remember if you called them fairs, but and so she gets to go out and be of the people. And so she's cloaked there for a while, but then isn't she glamored? And then
she drops the glamour because she thinks it's not fireworks, but a bomb threat or whatever. And that scene in particular shows a lot of growth on even Neldor's part, where they stop saying this doesn't happen in Faerie. We don't do these things. They start hearing her that Faerie is not Faerie anymore. And we need to start, because almost immediately he's like, you're right. We'll post more people. We'll have more of a presence. We'll make sure that nobody's doing anything bad. Like, so it's not always this fight anymore. Now it's that is a huge thing, because I wouldn't want to be Tamsin always fighting everything all the time. It's exhausting. But yeah, I was very happy to write that she got to do the basically peanut butter and jelly fair. It wasn't, but it was like it.
Oh yeah. She got to go out and try all the things that, you know, and she's such a glutton anyway, that she just got to go out and experience all of these things that she didn't get to do because they, you know, she wasn't raised in the world, and then they all went away. And then coming back, it was just sort of like a culmination, just a celebration of, we are back, we are happy, you know, we're rebuilding, and we want to share it with our queen, and our queen wants to share it with us.
And there's a lot of hope. And the fact that when she did show herself, they all, instead of jumping on her or being jerks, and she was in the dark realm. So, and they all just went, have a wonderful night, Your Highness. You know, go back to glamoring. We saw nothing. That is amazing progress. And I was glad that she got that warm and tingly's before she accepted the role. I liked in her coronation where she blocked the magic from those ancients, even if they weren't the noble ancients, the bad ones. And she kind of gave them a look of like, you really thought I would trust you, strangers? Like, are you like what? And the one guy is just kind of like, yeah, no, f- Fair.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like that they fought for her to redo her coronation. I like that they came out. And I say this like I didn't write it, but, you know, it's just how the, you know, I write it. I make it all up in my crazy head. But a lot of it is just how it unfolds. Like, I can't just say, oh, no, we're not going to do that. And then it makes no sense. Like, this is how the path lays out. But yeah, I like that the vote of confidence and people were, and even that fairies were becoming what everyone thought of them. They were being selfless again. They were not going to vote the earlier night because they wanted to leave it open for the guardians and people who had different roles. Like, they were becoming, in general, the people that the other soups always said that they were, instead of the selfish, demanding assholes that Tamsin only saw from the moment she woke them up.
So the last thing I have is the seclusion that she went into in the coronation. And so, like, the seclusion was really funny because everybody kept just popping in, like, hey, here's some chicken sandwiches, or hey, here's some, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Cinnamon rolls, or I can't remember what they brought, but I thought it was really, really cute that they kept coming to see her. And she was like, she thought it was hilarious. And then they said, well, we did this with your mom, but they weren't supposed to know about each other.
Yeah. Yeah, and what was it? Who were the two that showed up at the same time, glamored, but only one could see the other?
Onassis
and so she showed them both, and they were like, "Hey, you're cheating!" Mm-hmm. But I like that Neldor sent one of, I forgot which one came first, but Neldor sent one of the guys first because he didn't want to be the one to get in trouble.
Right. It was sacrificial.
Neldor's such a shit. I love how he's become everyone's favorite, but he is still such a shit always.
Well, he's had a major turnaround in attitude, yeah. Hasn't he? Yeah.
Honestly, I got so scared at one point that I didn't know I could redeem him. That was a bigger redemption arc. Or actually, apparently I did it better than I thought, because people were all about Neldor before I thought he was fully redeemed. So,
ooh.
But I'm not a big into the bullying genre and the whole, you know, bad guy turned good. I actually just like the good guys who get over their shit, like Julian. Yeah, I was a little worried after that first couple books with Neldor, where I was like, I don't know that he deserves to be forgiven. But then there are a lot of people who turned so bad on Darby's mistakes and, like, went back and were like, he is emotionally abusive. He is the one I hate the most. He's done the most wrong. And I'm like, whoa, I did not see that coming. Because they think even from the beginning, he was controlling her because of the way he was always so defensive of the others. And he's not a mate, but just her boyfriend and da 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 da. And I'm like, I don't know that I take it that far. I can see what you're saying. I appreciate your perspective, but I don't know that I would say that is emotional abuse. I think it was all emotional abuse to me. I see as more intentional. Darby's
right.
thing
he was just
was,
in La La Land. He was just
And insecurities and pretty valid ones. All of Fairy didn't want him there. That's a pretty big thing to be insecure about.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't think Darby's was more like he just kind of faded because he was busy.
He tried to be an adult before an adulting things before he was ready. I can't think of any of us who haven't done that.
Sure.
I don't know if it was this book or the book before, but I like the thing with Sean and Marshall and the Rothschilds, where she goes to talk with Trigger and all of them, and they're like looking for help, and she's like, I will just tell them. You tell them, or I will just tell them.
I think sometimes people just need to be told, like, this is not what you think it is, or it is exactly you know, different. Yeah.
And then in front of the whole Rothschild family, she's like, look, I'm all for Marshall and Sean. I don't know if you guys are good enough for them. And then it's just, know your audience, TM, sometimes know your audience. But, you know, fair enough. She definitely knows Marshall and Sean better than she knows Avril and.
Oh, yeah. But the coronation, I could picture it. It was beautiful. You know, it was really cool to read about that with the rose petals and the pool that she was in, and, you know, her changing the costume so that it wasn't such a
revealing, creepy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was just really effective, I think, in a transformation for her, visible transformation.
Yes. I wanted to give enough details where you could see it, but it wasn't Tolkien focused on a blade of grass. Like, I didn't, and I'm not even picking on Tolkien, but I didn't want that for that scene. I didn't want people to get lost in the visual. Well, still, I don't like to pick on people meanly. I'm sure. That kind of, you know, discussion and loquacious speech has its, you know, purpose or time. This wasn't the time in my mind. I wanted it to be enough where you could visualize it, you could feel like you were there, but you weren't bogged down with the details, or that was all you saw, as opposed to living in the moment. It was more like, take a quick picture, but put your phone away and just, you know, just focus.
Right. It felt very rich and yeah, well thought out, and obviously well thought out. Everything you do is well thought out, but
I wouldn't go that far, but
very
more than less times. It's you know, it's all planned well, but you know, the execution sometimes, I admit it. There are some times where I just can't it's beyond my capabilities as an author to execute it, and somebody probably could do it better. I've read that enough in reviews. I don't always disagree. It's what I do with my abilities, and I honestly don't think I could have done this last book better. I think it is the pinnacle of where my authoring and writing abilities are in this moment. And I don't know that I will look back in 5 years and think that I could have. I look back on Dr. Kelly Murphy, and sometimes I'm disappointed that that story got brand new, not even published author Aaron to write it, because it could have had a lot more potential. I don't think I'll look back on Artemis and ever think that way.
No, I don't think you will either. I think that, I think that, and I told you this after you yelled at me, but
I bullied you into complimenting me, let's just call a spade a spade. I bullied you into complimenting me.
But you should have been the first place, because you loved me. But no, it wasn't that. It was that I wanted to give it the due time and the due thoughtfulness.
And you were going through a lot. It's completely understandable. I almost got put in a straitjacket finishing this series.
So I think the world building, the character development, just the map on the wall with the red string and the push pins and the, you know, that's the way I think of it, that you have to have this like giant wall in your, you know, in your home where you have plotted out all these things. And it's just gorgeous. Like the whole, not even the culmination, but the progression of your characters and them finally getting where they need to be. And it's not perfect and it's not wrapped up with a bow, but there's enough that you've given to your readers, and you've dedicated so much time to these characters that we feel you in the books. I think
wanted everyone to feel, definitely I'm in the books. I appreciate you seeing that. I wanted everyone to feel peace. This was a peaceful resolution. There were no right or left hooks or side boob punches or anything. I wanted everyone to feel at peace with this ending and comforted knowing that the story goes on, even if they're no longer a part of it. It's like a friend that moved away and you know, they're living their best life, but you're just not really a part of it anymore, and there's no hard feelings. That's the feeling I wanted to leave. Do I like the ending? No. Let me preface.
Okay.
That. No, wait. Let me. I guess I should say that better. I like the ending that I wrote. I don't like endings. I don't like the endings of normal books. The ending is the hardest part for me to write. I don't like an ending of a series. So I didn't like the ending because I don't like things to end. It's nature of just, this should go on forever, but it can't. She had to graduate. This was the you know, parameters of the series and the genre, and this is what happens. I think that is the best ending possible for Tamsin. That is the ending I wanted to happen for this series. And yeah, it should just be a peaceful, soft landing, and Tamsin's moving away to Faerie to live her best life, and I didn't want anybody to sit up at night like and just get angry, or you know, oh, that left hook, or you know, Daenerys Targaryen dead in the end.
Oh, spoiler alert! Jeez.
Oh yeah, sorry. I've never even watched into Game of Thrones, and I know that. So you know, yeah. So I love how you're just like, okay, you didn't like your own ending. I don't like any endings.
Well, that's different then.
Yeah, So I understand. So what I'm saying is I understand if people don't like the ending. There are going to be a lot of people who don't like it. I'm going to hide from social media because this will not probably be fun. It should be the expected ending. And that is what I wanted. I wanted people to not be surprised. I wanted people to not be blindsided. If it was going to end, I wanted a comfortable, peaceful ending. And we all just know that Tamsin's living her best life in Faerie as queen. And we're just kind of jealous we can't be there to live that nice life instead of the shit we all have to deal with.
Right. And I think you accomplished it. I think we all felt satisfaction with the story, and that Tamsin has her both feet solidly where she needs them, and her team rallied around her, and she's not got any outliers for the most part where she can make of villains or, you know, threats. Yeah. And so she can make real progress and make the world, you know, the world of Faerie good again. But it wasn't good to begin with. But, yeah. You know, go harken back to the days where they were remembered fondly.
Yeah.
The way it should have been without the, you know, the dark pall of the two queens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well said. So I'm recording this after talking with my editor and after Artemis has come out. And I want to thank everybody for the amazing feedback and wonderful words about how they were glad that that's the way Artemis ended. It was a big stress point for me that I have not hid. I think a lot of people appreciated the insight into being an author and the publishing world because of that. I wanted to thank everybody for the feedback that they've given. And it was really nice to hear that people are happy with the resolution. On the note of ending things, we're also ending the podcast. This is the last episode, and I want to truly thank everybody who came on, and I made some friends. We had some really great conversations. Even the people who were brats and didn't show up or were problems have given some good chuckles with. But as most of you know, I am an introvert, so this was a very fun experiment. It is a little too high anxiety for me. I'd rather wrap this up nicely and refocus on other projects that I want to work on in the future, including something I'm planning for 2026, which is great when it's not even 2025. It was really fun to step out of my comfort zone and try and do something different, but I think it's run its course, and I'm proud and happy where this has gone. But yeah, in the name of closing things out and coming in 2025 a little bit lighter, this is going to be the last episode. Again, I want to thank everybody who came on. Some of them, it was their first time too, and we had a lot of good laughs, and I hope everybody's enjoyed listening to it. So best of luck to everybody, the authors who came on, and all the fans who have listened, and I wish us all a better 2025 than 2024. Thanks for staying till the end, and hope you enjoyed it.